C2PR. Number 26A.
Well, we have come to the end of the Lord's Prayer. And I think the Lord's Prayer is quite interesting in a way that if we consider the seven statements in its order, that we see there something which is giving us a kind of a law, a kind of a law of the subtones, because in that prayer comes out something very clearly. Namely, we have said that the first three, for instance, the first three statements are all about the Godhead per se. It says, our Father, Mother God, thy name, thy kingdom. See, it directs first thought or prayer to the Godhead, to the nature that God is mind, spirit, and soul. When we come to the fourth statement, we also have a thy. But here we get already the correlation of God with his expression. Because thy will be done not only in heaven, but also in earth. So we get here at once a touch that if our prayer in the first three tones are actually directed to the right object, namely to God, in the right way, through the three, that translates itself as demonstration to us, to the earth. So the fourth statement shows that principle begins to operate as spiritual power not only in heaven, but on earth. And then, at that point, the next three show no more prayer to the Godhead, but much more shows what is now happening on earth after the fourth. Namely, then we have the outcome of a true prayer, the working of God in us, and suddenly everything that we read there is us. Give us this day our daily bread. Give us grace for today. Then the sixth, and forgive us our debts, as we forgive our debtors. And in the seventh, and lead us not into temptation. And God leadeth us not into temptation, but delivereth us from sin, sickness, and death. Can you see this law in here? That it gives us the law that is ruling in prayer, which says, well, first of all, through the first three tones, we must get first the right attitude towards God. Towards God. Not towards man, not towards its creation, just towards God. If that attitude is right, if mind, spirit, soul is right, that mind, spirit, soul constitute the principle of being. And the moment we have the principle of being, the fourth, we begin to see that principle and idea is one. That principle operates not only in heaven, but also on earth. That it demonstrates that it has an effect. And so we begin to see now a prayerful attitude brings back the right effect, the right answer. And so with the fifth, sixth, and seventh, we get the answer. That everything turns around the us. We are given the the bread of life, we are being forgiven in truth, and we are not led into temptation, love. So that we are absolutely whole and holy, so to say, that we have found our way to holiness. Nothing can touch us anymore at the seventh step. Nothing can lead us anymore into temptation. No suggestion of animal magnetism can have any hold on us anymore. So, can we see that if we really can interpret the text scientifically, that suddenly we find, through the correct analysis, we suddenly find definite laws. The law of prayer, which we said the fundamental law of prayer is that through the first three tones we have a right attitude towards God. In the fourth we begin to see that then everything begins to harmonize within ourselves, the prayer of honesty. Here it is the prayer that what happens in heaven now also happens on earth. And we have here the correlation of heaven and earth. We would say here we have the correlation that we have the same as what God has. Principle and idea is one, whatever we can, we want to point it out. And then we say, now what does God give us? Gives us the way of life, the daily bread, the way of life. Gives us the method. And it gives us as truth that we are free of error, that we are freed of error, that we forgive our debtors as we are forgiven. And that at the end we see it not only frees us of error, but it never leads us into error. It never can touch us anymore at the point of love. So that we feel we are there. We have reached the paradise, the El Dorado. Yes? So hot. You see, these are the things that the scientist just makes happy. And when one begins to see these things, you walk around for a week or 2 weeks very happy. You feel, golly, 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 I have found there some law. I've not just found the nice statements and nice interpretations of a biblical text. I found a law. And so, can you see that through correct text interpretation, we find more than just an explanation? We find something much more than that. It opens up orders, the order of the seven. It opens up laws, definite laws, and little by little it opens up more and more and more. And then we really touch it in its science. I said, well, the seven subjects have an order. So let's look quickly, recapitulating the seven prayers, just in the main tone. Can we see the spiritual order in it, the irresistible order in it? What have we seen in the tone of mind, or in the first prayer? We have seen there that we must start with desiring the true object of prayer. That the true object of prayer there is not that we wish for this or that or the other, but that the true object of desire is to know God as He is. That's our prayer. Not to pray that it will rain tomorrow, not to pray that the weather will be better tomorrow, not to pray that we get a better job the next day. Not, all these things, these are the nuts. They will never happen. because they are all things that are given unto us. In the Lord's Prayer, they are given unto us at the point of life, truth, and love. But in order to have those things given unto us, we jolly well have to start out right. And that is to pray that within ourselves is the right concept of God. And so that's the starting point, to know God as he is. And Mrs. Eddy presents there God as he is, says it is the all-knowing mind, it is the all-supplying spirit, it is the unchangeable soul, it is the principle of the science of being, it is life that is pouring forth more than what we can accept, it's already giving us more than what we can ask, it is already doing the right. You don't have to tell God how to do right, it's already doing the right. Shows love that says, my work is done, I don't have to do anything anymore, it's just up to you that you use the right rule. So this is the very first motioning prayer that we build up in our consciousness, the true sense of what God is. Then it goes to the second subject and says, now worship that. Don't leave it just there as a thinking it out, just as a think process. Go further. Worship that. Now we can see we cannot worship and reflect the divine being if we wouldn't know what that divine being is. And we saw there that the second prayer started out, the divine being must be reflected by man. And we said, how could that be at the beginning of the prayer if we would not know what the divine being is? So we could not reflect it. We would worship something blindly. So the worship of God must come second. The adorable one is the second stage. And so when we have, built up in the first prayer mentally or in thinking the true concept of what God is, what he is, then we can't say, now I understand it. I have only built up a true concept. The prayer of spirit now says, now you know what you can worship. Now you know if you worship that which you have established in the first prayer, that you really worship the real God, the reality of being. But you have to worship it. That's reflection, if you worship it. How do you worship it? And then she builds it up right through the second prayer and says, well, you worship it spiritually. Therefore, what does that mean? That means that we put all the best spiritual qualities into that desire. That we are grateful that God exists, that life, truth, and love exist. We are grateful for the blessings received so that we can receive more. We worship by consecration of thought and energy and desire. We worship by giving to that desire the first place, that we put first things first, that we value it above everything, that we keep the commandment, that we stick to that God and to that worship, and don't give in. In this way, we begin to give to our desire substance, so that isn't just a thought. If we do that, then naturally something happens. The third prayer, the prayer of soul, reforms us. We can't help that. If we put all our spiritual qualities and the best of our spiritual qualities into the prayer, then naturally we don't put the bad qualities in it. Therefore, the good qualities gain ascendancy within us. They will be more and more. And so little by little, the wrong worship, the material worship, the material inclinations fade out, and that reforms us. So that Third, prayer, the prayer of reformation, shows that if we stick to the second subject, the second prayer, and really put all our spiritual qualities into it, then naturally we must reject the opposite, the materialization of our desire. We must reject it, we must rebuke it. And so we must have within ourselves, through the second prayer, we have the strength to rebuke sin, to rebuke the temptation not to use that rule. And in this way, reformation takes place. More and more the sinlessness of the idea will be stronger and stronger and will gain supremacy. It reforms us. When everything within us gets in line with God, is reformed, only then really everything within us harmonizes with each other, operates together, and we get the sense of principle that everything within ourselves therefore is operating in a harmony of being, in a consistent web of consistency, that everything within us, what we feel, what we say, what we do, what we act, what we know about ourselves, is all in conformity with that principle. So that we get the whole and person, a person of integrity, you could say, because everything is geared towards that one principle. So we cannot be honest. We cannot have the fourth prayer of honesty, where everything is really geared towards one principle, if we would not have first known what principle is in mind. That we say, what is that God? Or we would have given our devotion to a wrong God in the second prayer. And therefore, if we give our wrong devotion to God in the third prayer, we would not be able to gain sinlessness, to be changed. We would still be a muddle of good and evil, of material affection, spiritual affection. Therefore, never would we be a whole personality, the fourth. Can you see the reasoning of it? These are the exercises that you can do around about 500 times in the next year. Always go over it. Yeah? See? It's only that way that we gain it. And every time we think it over and say, why has the fourth prayer to come after the first and second and third? Why couldn't it come before it? All these questions help us to get in rhythm with the order of being. Only when everything within us in the fourth prayer begins to be in consonance with the principle, in harmony with the principle, only then really principle can shine through us and bring out the newness of life. Only then do we have a right source in life, out of which always flows the floods of water, the fullness of being. And so by drawing from that source, we come to the sixth subject, because out of that source can only flow that which is right, never something that is wrong. So that we see by praying that prayer of life, by seeing that the cause must be God and not belief and not faith and not blind faith, only then when we understand that source, then out of that source flows the true life, the true facts of life, the newness of life. And to that we can say that is always true, that is always right. And we get, therefore, to the sixth subject, which says, then we embody only that which comes out from life, from the stream of life, from the well of life. We drink the waters of life, and we take it in and take it in, and more our consciousness is a consciousness of wholeness, of health, has no erroneous traits in it. And when that happens to the nth degree, then the prayer of love says, well, now you embody wholeness, and therefore now you have access to God's infinite possibilities. Then heaven-born aspiration flows in, then the consciousness of God, spiritual consciousness, flows in, then the instantaneous perfection flows in, and you have really gained access to God's infinite possibilities. So then that impossible can become possible. As she said at the beginning of the chapter, to God all things are possible, and she didn't say with God all things are possible, but much more that to God all things are possible. It really says if you approach in the first prayer God right, that will lead you to the last prayer, and in the last prayer, that last sentence, you really have the whole grace of God flowing on us and just giving us the infinite possibilities of being. So this is the order. To see how important it is not to just stay with reading the text, not even to interpret the text rightly. That's the second step. And how wonderful that is if we can do that. But even then we only have gained the tools with which to work. Then from that point on, again we have just the right concept building, just with the synonymous terms, we first get the concept building. But the most important part comes afterwards, namely the tonality building. And this still seems to be a difficulty with most students, that they feel, to say, at loss when they have to ponder themselves what they've found. They feel insecure. They don't know, what shall I think? What shall I ponder? It's quite natural that the human mind is much more satisfied when the text tells what to think. The text says, now think this term and then this term and this sentence. So we are still led by the text. But the real substantialization, the letter that becomes the spirit, is really there where you don't study the text anymore, where we have the interpretation of the text and sit back and close the book and say, now, what does that mean? What does that imply? Do I conform to that? Has it any implication on my attitude? Do I have to change anything with that, what I have gained through the study? See, you begin to have conversation with yourself and say, what does that all mean? Am I willing to pay the price? Am I willing to go that order? How do I go that order? How often do I go that order? Once in a month? Or a constant prayer? These are the great questions that we have asked to ourselves. And only by doing that, really, you can see, we gain the spirit. Constantly, this is the great question in the field, well, study thoroughly the letter and imbibe the spirit. So they say, well, Mrs. Eddy said that. Yes, I think this would be wonderful to have the spirit, but how on earth do I imbibe the spirit? Who tells how to imbibe the spirit? Can you pour that in, or what do you do, you know? How do you get the spirit? Do you get the spirit by getting emotional about it? Or or get into a wild ecstasy about it. Spirit is order. So we get the spirit by going through the order and thinking about the order, contemplating that order, seeing the beauty of it, the grandeur of it, seeing especially the promise of it. We must live by the promise. If we don't have a big promise, it is not worthwhile living for it. We must always see that our whole life is geared to the grace that we can think of. Never too less than that. Whatever that greatness is at the moment for each one should always be directed towards the greatest and not to the least. And then give to that our whole adoration, our whole worship, our best that we have spiritually. Always asking what is first, what is second. Always that question should be with us. Are we really putting first things first, or are we putting first things tense? Yes. So, in this way, you see, you can feel that you have a method of spiritualizing our thought and really get that spiritualization to the point where it becomes soul. See, we had first mind, we have first to have the concept, first to know it, what God knows, then you worship it, you give your best to it, and then suddenly that spirit becomes our natural identity, our natural being. It crystallizes so that finally we not even think about it, we just feel we are that. So that then at that point something is within us that acts automatically against something that is wrong. That sinlessness within us, that true identity of our own nature, acts at once against that which wants to sidetrack us from our high goal. And therefore, we do not need anymore to constantly fear, do I do the right? Will I know the right? Do I see the right? Will I be sidetracked? Constantly being in a way that one feels insecure. Constantly feel any moment something can happen. But through the spiritual touch of it, through the spirit of it, we get such an inward certainty and security that it takes care of us. It rebukes by itself whatever tries to sidetrack our mission.